Possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, Computers and You. This is a topic we take up once a month on the third Thursday of the month. This afternoon, Peter Kimball is our guest. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. And listeners, I welcome your questions about computers this afternoon for Peter Kimball. You can join us with the telephone call. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Good afternoon, Peter. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
How are you?
I'm good. Looking forward to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, you're looking forward to the holidays.
Yes, it's been a busy session of teaching and travel and such, and so it's always nice to have a change and be able to slow down just a little bit.
Yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to pause here for just a moment, and I'm going to readjust your microphone.
Oh, okay.
So hold on just a second.
Not quite in the right place.
I think that'll be better.
Now I'm in the same room?
There you go.
Okay.
We're in the same room, at the same table.
I was getting tired of hollering down the hall there.
So, speaking of holidays, people are thinking maybe of doing a little shopping, maybe buying a computer or a gizmo. What's hot this holiday season, do you suppose?
Well, the constant progression of you get more and more power and more capability for less and less money is continuing. And so we have computers. If somebody hasn't updated their computer and it's seeming a little bit slow and it's been a few years and they want to spend a few $100s, you can get much more computer now for that amount of money than before. But that's still several $100s. Digital cameras are coming down in price and up in quality. Scanners, there are still some people who scan. There are some things that you need to scan. If you don't have the digital photo, you've got an old photo. And then there's the category that I was exploring a little bit earlier this morning about gadgets, like little stocking stuffers, if you're looking for that. I know probably a lot of listeners and some folks here in the studio as well carry around a Swiss Army knife. It's got all sorts of little tools. Well, now there's a Swiss Army knife that has built into it a little USB flash drive. It just folds out like the scissors and the knife blades and the screwdriver and the pliers and everything else, except it's a 128-megabyte little flash drive. Plug it into the side of your computer, store your files, move them elsewhere. You're not really fully equipped unless you've got a Swiss Army knife that has the ability of storing your computer files.
Right, so after the show, I'm running out.
I think you might want to consider it.
I don't know how I've managed to live without that.
And it's from one of the two official Swiss Army knife companies. It's Victorinox, which is one of those companies.
Well, that is pretty amazing, isn't it? Such a small little thing.
Well, and a lot of people are finding these little USB flash drives. They typically come in, not necessarily in Swiss Army knives, but in packages about the same size, and they can store an immense amount of data. They can store several documents. They can store photos. They can store all sorts of things, and it gives you a very portable way of backing information up. If you want to use perhaps a computer that's not really your regular computer, you can plug that in, and while it's in there, it's just like another hard drive, and then you take it with you. Mm. And so it's completely secure. You're not leaving your data behind.
Okay.
Unless, of course, you lose it, which means you want to make sure that you've got backups and such.
Right. Well, what do you say we put the gizmos aside for a moment, at least, and talk with a listener who's waiting to talk with us on line one. Jason, you want to put the caller on? Go ahead, caller on line one.
Hi. I'm buying a new computer. I got some specs from a computer teacher that I know. Then I went over to the Dell kiosk at the mall, and it's kind of a toss-up whether I get Microsoft Home or whether I XP Home or whether I get XP Professional. And could you ask me some questions about what I do with my computer so I could decide whether I get Home or Pro?
Well, the first question will be we're assuming this is a home computer.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate anybody is going to be using this home computer to connect through the internet to a computer network at somebody's place of employment?
No.
Okay, that would be if you were doing that, for example, if somebody were with the University of Illinois and they wanted to tie into an existing domain or sub-network of computers, there are a number of advantages that a Windows XP professional would give you, but that's not a consideration for you.
Uh-uh.
You're probably not going to have a really substantially complex home network as well, although even with Windows XP Home, you can still network and communicate between your computers. So probably off the top of my head, I would say that you could, because it's going to cost you probably an extra $70 to go professional.
$79.
Okay. And so it's, and you could always upgrade at a later time if you discover you need it. So you might be better off at this point spending that extra $79, either saving it or spending it on additional memory.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very good if when you're getting this computer, a lot of them, most of the Dells, I think these days, come with at least 256 megabytes. That's really barely enough these days. You'd want to go to 512.
I was going to get 512.
Well, and that's an excellent choice, and you would not even be far wrong if you decided to double that, if they offer some sort of deal and go up to a full gigabyte. That'd be 1,000 megabytes.
Uh-huh. And then between 80 and 100...
It depends. Oftentimes, Dell is, and I don't know what their current offer is, and I don't know how.
He told me that it changes every Thursday,
so your listeners
might like to know that.
And certainly, if you go to the Dell site as well as to the Dell kiosks, there are times when they will have as part of their promotion a free upgrade to a gigabyte of RAM, or maybe they'll add as part of a promotion. And other companies do this as well. But
last week it was a free flat screen monitor.
Okay, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
I know some weeks, and they include two CD or DVD drives instead of one.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you have to pay for it, I'm glad that you had chosen 512, because you'd want to do that even if you had to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got this extra 70 or 80 bucks that's burning a hole in your pocket, then put it towards more memory, because that extra memory can always be useful.
Okay, and I think I'm going to have somebody, switch me over from my old computer to my new computer. My old computer has a floppy drive, and I told them I didn't want that on the new one because I think it's pretty obsolete. But can you tell me kind of simply how I get the stuff on my old computer onto my new hard drive?
Well, there are a couple of ways. One is if the old computer has a network card to plug it into what's often called an Ethernet card.
The new
one certainly will, because they almost all do. If the old one does, then in a simple little home network with a little network router like from Linksys or one of the other companies for under 50 bucks, mm-hmm. you can have a home network, and then you'll just see with the appropriate setup, which is not that difficult, you will see the other computer's hard drive as a resource on your new machine and just be able to drag and drop, and it'll go over at network speeds.
Oh, okay.
But that, of course, requires that the old computer have a network card, or that you pop one into it, because you can buy a network card or get a used one for $10 or $15 these days. So that'd be one route.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't have a network card,
mm-hmm.
then you've got a couple of other options. There are some companies, I think PC Anywhere might be one of them. What operating system, what version of Windows is your old machine running?
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall? Is it like Windows? It's a Windows machine, I presume.
Mm-hmm.
Make me Windows 98 or Windows 2000, or do you happen
98.
To know? Okay. You may well be able to use software from a company such as PC Anywhere. It's Symantec, and so I think it's PC Anywhere, which in earlier versions at least had a cable that would connect between the serial ports, one of the connections on the back of the machines, assuming
mm-hmm.
your new machine has a serial port. That's a much slower way of doing the connection, but it does work. The other possibility, we'll assume also that your old machine does not have a CD burner.
No, it doesn't. It's a 5-year-old Comcast.
Okay. The new machine certainly does, but it is also possible, let's see, if it's 5 years old, it may not have a what's called a USB port either. So I was going to mention another possibility would be just plugging in an external CD burner and just burning the files that way. One reason I was thinking in that direction was most of the material that's on the old machine, you really don't need to transfer. You don't need to transfer your old software or the old programs.
No, it's my documents.
It's the documents, and that's usually a much smaller amount of space. But, of course, you don't have the diskette drive. So we've got the network possibility. We've got an external third-party software program like PC Anywhere from Symantec.
Okay.
And another possibility, if you have somebody who's technologically comfortable with opening a case on the computer, depending upon which format the what kind of hard drive and what kind of hard drive system the new machine has, if they are compatible, it's actually possible in some cases to simply remove the hard drive from the old machine, temporarily connect it to the new machine, and just transfer it internally. But one problem with that is a lot of the newer machines now use a different way of connecting to hard drives, something much faster called serial ATA.
Mm-hmm.
And your five-year-old machine does not have a disk guaranteed, does not have a disk drive that can communicate with that set of rules. But that's what I've done when I haven't moved too far between generations.
Right.
But it involves opening both cases.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Good luck. Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other listeners are invited to join us this afternoon. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL.
You know, Celeste, I realized that there's another option that is tying into what we were talking about before with the Swiss Army knife with the USB flash drive. Not that you'd have to get a Swiss Army knife to get the USB flash drive, but if that last caller, for example, added USB capability to her compact, her older machine, which is simply a $10 or $15 card, then you could take one of these USB flash drives, plug it into the back of that, transfer, and 128 or 256 megabytes is probably going to be more than enough for most of her documents unless she's got lots and lots of photos, and then simply unplug it, plug it into the USB port, which is guaranteed to be on her new machine, and transfer it that way.
That seems a very elegant solution.
It does require that you have a place to plug it into in the old machine, which might recall, and there are a number of options for doing that, some of them not as fast as others, but that would be another way.
Okay. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an old Wang computer that I'm looking to get rid of, and I wonder if there's any place to unload such a thing. It was quite an investment in its day.
Is this like a Wang 2200 or a Wang PC or?
Yeah, it's like the big mainframe.
Okay. And of course, it has absolutely no resale value now, as you're probably well aware. So what you really want to do is something other than just dump it in recycling, because there are a lot of components in there that have lead and other elements that you don't really want to go into the waste stream. So I can't recall off the top of my head, but if you call any of the, just about any of the, are you in the Champaign-Urbana area?
Yes.
If you call almost any of the the computer manufacturing or the computer used computer, like Champaign Computer Consortium or Champaign Computer Company, I believe, or the used computer place, they can probably give you a reference to locations that will take your used computer for you, recycle it. In most cases, there's not a fee unless it's a monitor, and they'll charge you some money to dispose of the monitor. But that's pretty much what you'll need to do. It's odd that you mentioned that, because up until about 2 or 3 years ago, I had one of those big Wang 2200 computers as well.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it's
great machine once.
Yeah, it was. And then it just ended up being used as sort of a table to stack stuff on top of.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But and it's amazing how much space that actually frees up when you get rid of it.
But
there are companies that specialize in recycling electronic equipment, and you could certainly call. My first call would probably be to one of the computer stores, not the big box stores, but the computer stores that that are more local. You could also do a web search, a Google search for computer recycling, Illinois, Champaign, see what you can find that way.
You wouldn't want it, would you?
No, I'm afraid not. It was hard enough for me to, the thing is heavy, it was hard enough for me to get it downstairs. For whatever strange reason, put it up on our second floor. But good luck.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks for the call. Maybe somebody also listening this afternoon will call us with the answer to that question. And I think that weren't some of the big companies, like Microsoft, and aren't there programs out there?
Some of them do have programs to recycle that.
Yeah, you might have to pay them a little handling fee
and
or something.
And Wang, of course, went through some problems and some Chapter 11 reorganization, so you're not really going to be able to get back to Wang at this point.
Let's talk with another caller, a listener on the toll-free line, line 4. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling from Paris, and I run Windows 98 in an AOL browser, and I've had some unusual occurrences occur in the starting up of Internet Explorer. Let's say I'm on the Drudge Report, and my Internet Explorer will start up and show pop-up ads. I do have the pop-up ads disabled so far as the AOL browser will allow you to do it.
So this is behavior that's just started. Internet Explorer has started popping up all sorts of things that you didn't want, and
well, it's just the pop-up ads. In other words, since they can't make their way through the AOL browser, there seems to be something on, say, the Drudge Report that will start up Internet Explorer by using a little 2-inch by 2-inch window that says ..we... up in the blue bar. And it's impossible to turn that window off or do anything with it. And then the pop-up ads will be displayed through Internet Explorer, which I
right.
do not have running.
Well, what you have is a machine that has been infected with what's called adware.
Yes.
And so that can be fairly difficult to deal with manually. You're going to need to, if you haven't already done so, download a couple of free programs that can get rid of most of the adware, although those who are writing adware and it's kind of nastier cousin called spyware are getting more and more clever and making it more and more difficult for some of these programs to eliminate.
Could you suggest a program or two?
Yes. The two free programs that are most commonly recommended, and I use them myself, one is called AdAware. And it's from a company called LavaSoft. Uh-huh. You need to be a little bit careful because in a really nasty little turn, there are companies out there that sell sound-alike products at similar websites that actually install more adware.
Okay.
So what you want is something called AdAware from a company called LavaSoft.
AdAware.
And I think it's if you do a search for AdAware in Google and for LavaSoft, you'll probably
right.
find it.
Okay.
Another one is something that's called SpyBot, Search and Destroy.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them do very similar sorts of things. In each case, neither of them will find everything, and sometimes you have to run it two or three times. But what you can do, or what you have to do when you download these is the very first thing is you use that particular program to go out to its home base and download the most current set of ad and spyware definitions.
Mm-hmm.
It's much like using a virus checker. Mm-hmm. I have a friend, I was just dealing with this last week, who has a 14-year-old son who is downloading just who knows what.
Yes.
Things that look kind of nice and, you know, gee, I can now share my files and I've got this music and I've got this neat little cursor and I've got this, that, and the other. We ran AdAware and it counts every little instance, programs, changes to the registry, the window controlling thing, and it found something like 960 or so instances of this, of which it was able to remove all but five or six.
Uh-huh.
So that's what you've got going. You're apparently fairly early in the infection process because some of these programs go out and fetch their friends and invite them to the party on your computer, at which point the entire system slows down so much that it's almost unusable. But that's what you want to do. You can also, to find these, you can go to one of the more reputable websites like PC Magazine or something and do a search there, and they may well have links for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just check and see if I have still a website that might help, because at one time I created one that was there, and I'm just trying this out here just a second. Yes, if you actually go to a site that we put, it's got links to SpyBot and Adaware. It's a couple of months old now, but if you simply go to, and at one point from a few months ago, this was linked from the WILL site, but if you simply go to the site FAST3, F-A-S-T-3. Fast, F-A-S-T, as in speedy.
Yes.
But it's fast. It's just a single page. There's not much here except a list of these sites and links. fast3.uiuc.edu/safety.
Okay.
And all I've got there is just keep your virus up to date, get a firewall, and it has links to Adaware and to SpyBot.
In a related issue, if I have time for one more quick one, my Internet Explorer seems to be corrupted, and I was trying to upgrade it or freshen it up, and how would you suggest that I do that? Let's say after this problem is solved with the Adware.
Well, one of the difficulties is that we're reaching the point at which Microsoft doesn't do the regular updates for Windows 98 anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you can try going to the Windows Update site, www.windowsupdate.com.
Yes.
And they may, I'm not sure to what extent you're going to get Windows 98 support, but they can then run a program that if there is a updated version of Internet Explorer available for Windows 98, that you'll then be able, to download.
Uh-huh.
The other possibility is simply go to the Windows site and say you want to download and you don't even try to update if it doesn't do it automatically for you, and see if just go to the Windows site, choose Explorer, and download the most recent version, replacing your current one.
Okay, well, thank you very
much. There are some versions of Explorer that will not run on Windows 98.
Pardon, sir?
You'll need to – it'll ask what is your version of the software, and so you don't get all the latest features unless you're running a recent version of Windows.
Well, thank you very much for the help.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. It's our monthly discussion, Computers and You. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Also, for that last caller, Peter – he might want to look into the Mozilla Firefox.
Yeah, Firefox is another browser, and it's one that is recently released. It's the most recent release of what originally started as Netscape, went open source, called Mozilla, and Firefox has just been out, I don't know, for a month or so, I believe, because it is pretty much written from the ground up, and because it's not as widely used, it has not been targeted for attacks by all of the various virus and adware and spyware writers. It's an excellent browser. There are some sites that it does not display quite properly yet because they're customized for Internet Explorer, but that's certainly a possibility as well.
Yeah. There was a nice article in the Washington Post online. I guess it was in Sunday's paper, but online you can find it there. I found it there today or yesterday. I don't know. Go to WashingtonPost.com and then go to their technology section of the paper, and there's a reviewer there who's really high on
yes.
this Firefox
it's
thing.
And just simply doing a Google search on Firefox, too, will bring up a number
of resources. Mozilla.org.
Yes.
Let's talk with another listener. Let's go next to a caller on line two. Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Oh, yeah. I had a question. I have a digital camera, and it also takes short movies, silent movies. What I found, though, is it'll take a 7-minute movie, and it turns in over 100 megabytes. And what I'm wondering, is there software out there that will compress that similar to the way you can compress a digital photo?
Well, the format that you have, what the digital camera is probably doing is creating an MPEG file.
It's a QuickTime file.
Okay, QuickTime. And QuickTime and MPEG are already fairly compressed. This is not an area where I spend a lot of time working, so I can't give you a definitive answer. But those, one thing to be aware of is that video files are inherently much larger. Essentially, you're having to store all of the information, not for a single photograph, but for the equivalent, roughly, of 30 of them per second, although it only has to really save the changes. So, yes, in general, you can be a little bit more efficient with that, but I don't think if you're doing much video you're going to find. I mean, that's why they're now selling 250-gigabyte hard drives and 400-gigabyte hard drives for people who are working with video, because those files are huge.
Well, how do they stream that stuff over the Internet, I mean, with limited bandwidth?
Well, they do it in limited bandwidth. You can set the video. Now, of course, the camera that you're using to probably record the video is probably limited in the number of frames, so I would guess that it looks a little bit jerky, and it's fairly low resolution. And over the Internet, what they do is they simply start pulling away the information. So if you have a fairly slow connection, what you're going to have is limited frames, so it might be 10 or 12 frames per second, with limited detail. You'll have a fairly small window. The streaming video over the Internet is, of course, it doesn't have to download the entire file. It just has to load enough for you to be able to play it back as you go. It could still be, if you were to save all of that, several hundred megabytes in length. When it's streaming, you never really worry about the ultimate storage size, because you're just getting some, playing it, and then it's being discarded.
Okay, so basically there really isn't any way around the fact that you're just ending up with big files.
That's it. When you're dealing with video, you're dealing with very large files. There are some minor ways you can deal with it, but QuickTime and MPEG and the others are already, because of the huge size of files, are already compressing a lot of that.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Next, we talk with a listener on line 3. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
In regard to the person who had a computer to recycle...
Yes.
There was a company, a firm in Urbana, and I'm trying to think of where it was. I think it's just north of Main Street in that area between Race and Vine. And they were operating out of the back of a store. But they were taking any kind of computer, and then they were salvaging the memory and pulling whatever they could out of it and... keeping it
out of the waste stream. Yeah,
waste stream. I wish I could think of where exactly where they were, but I can't. But I'm sure that a person could find it. It's I know it's north of Main Street.
Well, there is
far
a
north of there. I can't think of the name of the place. There's a pizza place near there, as I recall. I can't think of the name of it.
Well, maybe you've jogged the memory of another listener, so maybe we'll,
yeah.
We'll hear.
There is an organization called www.recycles.org, which I'm seeing in Google has a site, and it actually popped it up with a reference towards Champaign, but I'm not finding the actual Champaign. Oh, it's just a... this is a listing. Never mind. This is a listing for folks who have their old one, and it's sort of, I want to recycle this. Does anybody want it?
No, this is a
this is actually destruction, pulling the equipment out.
Right.
Getting the lead out, so to speak.
That's exactly it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying your program.
Let's talk with another listener, caller on line 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is probably a silly question, but... I'm in the same situation that the earlier lady had, where I have a Windows 98 machine, and we just bought a new machine, and I need to get some files, documents, and pictures and stuff off of it. And our Windows 98 machine does have a USB port in the back, but I've never used it, and I don't know this flash thing that you were talking about. Like, I understand how to put a floppy in, and I understand how to put a CD in. I don't understand at all about this flash thing and, like, how do I save a file to it or anything like that?
Well, first of all that the USB port is, it looks like the kind of a connector that you'd simply plug a cable into. So it's not actually the equivalent of putting in a CD or putting in a diskette. A flash drive, or USB flash drive, simply means that it uses the USB connection, and it's just like a cable that doesn't go anywhere. It's a cable end, but with a little device that actually is totally self-contained. So you simply plug it into the machine, and then with the appropriate software, and on a Windows 98 machine, you'll probably have to, with the USB device that you get, you'll probably have to download an appropriate driver. So the machine then will simply say, aha, there is a new hard drive out there. It's just like you've now got a drive D or a drive E in your computer.
And
that's while it is plugged in. Now, you will have to make sure that that you do get, if you just plug in on an older machine, on Windows XP, for example, or on a new Macintosh, if you plug in a USB device, it will recognize what it is and generally know how to deal with it. Your Windows 98 machine is not going to know that, and so it will need to have an appropriate software driver, but in a USB device. And they just are not much more than thumb-sized, really, except one end of it is a little plug that just plugs right into that port. It just kind of sort of sticks out the back while you've got it in there.
So once there's one in there, though, then when I have my machine up and it says you want to save it to A, B, C, D.
And you just put it over there, or you just open up Windows Explorer and drag it from one place and drop it on that USB drive.
And then unplug it for the old machine, put it in the new machine, and then drag it out of there.
Yes, although on Windows 98 and Windows 2000, you generally want to, there'll be a little icon once you've installed the driver that says click here so that it knows that it can disconnect, because some of the Windows 98 machines, for example, aren't going to take kindly. They'll complain and scold you if you just unplug it without saying, I'm now going to turn off, disconnect this device so I can unplug it.
Oh, that's really helpful to know. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
This has been really good. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Okay, thanks for the call this afternoon. We've got some other callers waiting to talk with us, but I also have a question from a listener who can't call in this afternoon. And the first question, I've got two quick questions here. The first question is something I've wondered about. It's a very interesting question. You know, when you're out with your laptop and
yes.
you're at a place where they've got wireless,
yes.
like Panera's or
Espresso
Cafe,
Royale Espresso, or Cafe Coppi, almost all the coffee shops
yeah,
these days.
Cafe Paradiso. When you're out there and you're surfing free Wi-Fi, is there a way, how do you know what you're doing is secure? You know, you're going to send data and receive data, and maybe you're going to be doing a little shopping out there, that kind of thing, and you maybe use a credit card number.
Well, that's true. There are several layers of security, but the basic thing you want to look at, and this would be true whenever you're using the Internet, if you're connecting to a site where you're going to exchange sensitive information, credit card numbers and the not, make sure that you have what's called a secure connection. The address, if you look at the address bar, will typically be HTTPS instead of HTTP. There'll be on Internet Explorer a little lock icon.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that whatever is being exchanged between your machine and the web server is being encrypted and fairly robustly. And as long as that's there, it doesn't really matter that much if you're connected wirelessly or not. It is possible for people with the appropriate software to detect that traffic because it is, after all, being sent by radio waves. But if you're dealing with a secure website with that little padlock icon there,
mm-hmm.
or the little key icon, I think it is, on Netscape, then what they'll be getting is this incredibly complex encryption. It won't be readable to them, and it would take them a very long time using high-powered computers to be able to crack it.
Okay, and also I would think that these places that are offering this to their customers, they would have their system set up so it should be secure.
Well, it's relatively secure. The question is, you're just using their system as an intermediary to connect to
mm-hmm.
the Internet. And so, yes, it's fairly secure, and typically a lot of these places, if you want to use the Internet and you make a purchase, they will give you a little password that you can use, but anybody can still, with the proper software, detect what's being sent back and forth. There's no way that you can, if you're connected with a wireless network, it is going to be a radio connection to the base station, and anybody with the appropriately configured laptop or receiver can find those signals. So you want to simply make sure that what you are sending is encrypted. It's not really so much a security issue of what the store or the coffee shop should do.
Okay. And then the second question from this listener reads, Kensington makes a kind of thumb drive device that appears to read your fingerprint. Can you tell him anything about this device?
This is one of the whole area of called biometrics. Instead of having a password or a passphrase, which anybody could figure out or steal, this is a device that plugs into the computer. You initially program it, you put your finger on it, it reads the patterns, it stores that in an encrypted form, and then the software that comes with this can be set up so that instead of having to type a password to get access to whatever mm-hmm. resource. You put your finger back on this thing, and if it reads it, it says, fine, you know, password accepted. If it doesn't read it and recognize it's the same one, it will be you'll be rejected. So it's just an alternative way of dealing with, instead of typing a password, identifying yourself via your fingerprint.
Okay. Let's go back to listeners waiting for us on the telephone this afternoon. On line four is where we're going to go next. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
This is probably science fiction, but when I've been listening to you, I just thought, boy, it'd be nice if we could. And what I'm thinking about, is it possible? Seems like the firewalls and all those sorts of things, I would say, are defensive. Is there any offensive thing, like if they hit my computer, I press a button, and all of a sudden he gets 6 million zillion emails himself and brings him down?
Well, nothing that you can do legally, but a lot of the virus wars and the Internet worm wars have been just that sort of thing. There's sort of been a gang territory where one group's virus attempts to disable that of others. And no, there's no real good way of doing that. And if you were to get into that, you know, you'd probably find yourself on the losing side of the battle anyway. A lot of these problems come from people who allow their machines, through not having a firewall or not keeping their software updated or not having up-to-date virus protection, their machines, and I would guess based on general national estimates, in Champaign-Urbana alone, there are probably 100 or 200 machines sitting connected, home machines connected to cable modems or DSL lines that are actually, though they'll still work for their owners, they are actually really under the control of some of these spam emailers, and in the middle of the night, they're just busy churning out spam and such. So these sort of web bots or bot networks, some of these folks have legions of thousands of machines that they can command to, you know, launch denial of service attacks. That's sort of what you're looking at. And yes, there'd be a certain amount of satisfaction in striking back and knocking them off the internet. But aside from that, they could then trace it back to you, quite possibly, since you wouldn't be as good at hiding your traces. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you're the one who goes to the slammer.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line
good thought,
two.
So.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question about, I purchased a printer a little over a year ago, maybe, so it's a relatively new model. It's a Canon, I think, maybe 520S or S520 or something like that. And it's a color printer. It's an inexpensive one. It was about $100, maybe a little over $100. And I hadn't been in the market for a printer for a long time, so I thought, wow, what a great bargain, you know. And it does print well, but I found that bargain turned into be quite expensive in that I'm always having to replace the color cartridges, which I never use. I don't even print in color. And is there some way to work around those messages you get, and essentially it stops your ability to print whenever those dry up, I guess, or something like that?
Yes, so your machine has two cartridges. One is the color cartridge and one is a black cartridge?
Actually has four.
Oh, it has four. So yeah. You've got a cyan, a magenta, a yellow, and a black. So you've got three separate color cartridges plus
correct.
A black.
And right, and I keep getting low ink messages, it seems like, right after I put them in, and then eventually it says the ink is out to replace the cartridge before you print again. And then you have to go buy $30 worth of color cartridges, which you've never used.
Well, I'm curious as to whether it really is using that. It's possible that the printer really is using that. Depending on the settings, it could be printing black by putting, instead of just using the black ink cartridge, combining cyan, magenta, and yellow, the other three colors, mm-hmm. which will give you a very, very dark brown, if not quite black.
What would it use black for then?
Well, it's supposed to use what it's supposed to use black is for areas that are just purely black. Are you printing primarily text?
Yes.
Sorts of things?
Mm-hmm. Yes, text.
So I would check and see if in the printer setup there is a way. I'm not familiar with this particular printer, but there may be a way of specifying that you don't want to use color at all. You simply want to use black, or use blacks only with black ink.
Mm-hmm. I kind of looked through those settings, and I couldn't find anything that seemed to refer to that. But, I mean, I guess...
Well, the next thing I would do, if it's a Canon printer, is go to the Canon site. And for the support site, there will probably be frequently asked questions or a support form of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, no doubt, not the only person who has had this particular
right.
difficulty. And
right.
explore that a little bit.
Okay.
And then a general Google search for Canon... maybe put your model number in there,
mm-hmm.
and ink usage or black ink or words of that effect,
mm-hmm.
And you'll probably yeah. find something that direction as well.
Okay, great. Good suggestions. Thanks for your help.
Okay, good luck. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line 3. Hello.
Hi. Yes. As far as the recycling computers?
Yes.
I don't remember the name of the company, but the News Gazette did a little business article on it. So you could go to the News Gazette site, search on computer recycling or whatever, and it would probably pop right up.
Well, and you know, I just popped in there, and let's see, there's a place at 907 West Market View Drive in Champaign called Computer Renaissance.
No, this was one in Urbana.
Okay.
This was a new business.
Mark's Twin City Recycling in North Lincoln, Urbana.
There we go.
Takes mm-hmm. old computers for recycling.
This was near downtown Urbana.
Okay, well, I'm not finding that. But yes, that's certainly a good suggestion. Go to the News Gazette site and do a search for computer recycling.
Okay.
Great,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the tip.
You're welcome.
Line 1, listener on line 1. Good afternoon.
Hi. I've been waiting here so patiently listening. The name of the company is Obsolete Technology Recycling.
Oh,
it's located at 126 West Main in Urbana. The phone number is 367-9820.
Wait, give us the phone number
yes.
again.
367.
Slowly. 367.
9820.
9820. Okay.
And the name of the?
Obsolete Technology uh-huh. Recycling.
Great. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you very much.
And it
much.
Is in Urbana.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks for that. Let's go and talk with another listener. We're going to go next to the toll-free line, line 4. Hi.
Hi, thanks for the show. I've got a quick question. The other day I went to check my Hotmail account, and it only came up once. The page came up. It looked exactly like MSN's site, but it seemed to be some sort of declaration by somebody, kind of goofy and everything. And it had the correct address, but it seemed to be someone's little triste of, you know, I'm taking over this web page and stuff. And then I closed down my browser, went to it again, and the regular, you know, Microsoft Hotmail site was up. And I was wondering, and I checked my computer later on with Spybot and Adware, and there was nothing on it. But is that, you know, possibly either something on my computer or maybe someone temporarily had done a redirect on their site, and then the people at Microsoft, you know, quickly found it and then corrected it?
That's possible. Currently, when you simply type the address, originally did you get there by typing the address or by clicking a link, or do you recall?
Actually, I was in Messenger, and I clicked on the link that, you know, jumps me to check my email. So I had, you know, MSN Messenger running, clicked on the link to jump to it. I was working with a friend of mine who was on his computer. He just jumped directly there, you know, just by typing in hotmail.com, and he got the regular Hotmail site. But then once I closed out the browser and did that again by clicking on the link inside my Messenger window, I came up into my, you know, inbox as usual. And, you know, I just didn't know if there was something on my computer, possibly Spybot or Adware did not pick up, or if it was maybe just a temporary redirect and then, you know, possibly somebody at Microsoft fixed it or corrected it.
Well, it seems unlikely that it was a problem with the Microsoft side of things that they would have corrected in that time. It's hard to know exactly what your difficulty was, especially since it wasn't replicable. It is possible, one of the things, but it's not the case for you, to hijack the host's file. That means there's a little file on your computer that tells the computer how to get to various sites. You type a particular name, it gets there. And if that's changed, then it never even bothers to look up the name. It just goes to the site. But that would not have been the case. This is called the host's file exploit.
Okay.
That would not have been it, since it worked fine when you typed the address the next time. It could have been, if you had been visiting a site, there might have been some temporary JavaScript added on an earlier page that redirected it.
Okay.
That's about the only thing that I can think of directly.
Right. Is there, other than, and I run it pretty much on a weekly basis, and I update the, you know, the definitions for Adaware and Spybot, and I also run, you know, antiviruses. There any other possible sort of program or anything that, you know, those two programs may not get that you might recommend just to sort of, you know, maybe check out my system to make sure there isn't any change in the registry or any place else that those two programs might not have picked up?
There, I don't have a specific recommendation. Certainly, if you, again, do a Google search and look for computer security, Spybot, spyware, adware, that sort of thing, you'll find a number of links. I guess I would also suggest, if you're not already running it, you might want to consider a software firewall, such as from Zone Alarm, which is also a free download.
Okay.
And take a look. Of course, all of these companies, and they're very good, but they'll also have paid versions that they hope that you like their regular version enough, the one that's free to upgrade to, which gives you more capabilities.
Okay, great. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate the info.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for the call, and thanks to everyone who called in this afternoon, and thanks for listening, those of you who were just out there listening this afternoon. Peter, thank you as well.
And it's always a pleasure. I'm glad we got that recycling number in there at the end.
Yeah, very good. And we'll see you in January, I think.
Yes, I'll look forward to it.
Very good. Peter Kimball has been our guest. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the FAST 3 Consortium, Center for Teaching Excellence at the University of Illinois. It's 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Jay Pierce.
And thank you very much, Celeste. Indeed, they are in the December wheat contract today. Had a high of 320.5, a low of 315.5, the settlement 316.25, down 2.25. March had a high of 331.5, a low of 326.5, the settlement 326.75, down 3. May wheat, the high 337.5, the low 333, the settlement 333.75. July 05, the high today, 344.25. The low is 339.5, the settlement 339.75, down 3. And September 05 wheat had a high of 349, a low of 346.5. The settlement 347, down 2. December corn had a high of 204.75, a low of 202.75. The settlement 204, down 1.75. March corn, the high 215.75, the low 214, the settlement 215, down 2.5. May corn, the high 223, the low 221.75, the settlement 222.25, down 2.5. July 05 corn, the high 229.5, the low was 228.25, the settlement 229.25, down 1.75. September 05 corn, the high 236.5, the low 234.5, the settlement 236, down 1.25. And December 05 corn, 244.5 for the high, the low was 241.75, the settlement 244.25, down 0.5. December oats, the high today, 150 even, and the low was 147.5, the settlement 147.5 unchanged. And the March 05 oats, 155.75 was the high, the low was 153.25, and the settlement 153.5 down 0.5. January soybeans, the high today 557, the low 549.5, the settlement 555, up 2 on the close. And the March 05 soybeans, 561 was the high, 554.5 the low, 559.75 the settlement, up 1.75. May soybeans, 567.5 was the high, the low is 561.5, the settlement 566.75, up 2.75. July 574.5 for the high, 568 was the low, 572.75 the settlement, up 2.25. And August soybeans had a high of 577, a low of 572, 576 was the settlement, up 2.5. And the September 05 beans, not enough activity to test the market. December soybean meal had a high today at 161, a low of 157.70. The settlement was 160.10, up 2.30. January soybean meal had a high of 162.20, a low of 159.30. The settlement 161.60, that up 2.10. December soybean oil, 21.65 was the high, 21.25 the low, 21.44 the settlement, down 17. And January soybean oil also closed down 17. The high today was 21.77, the low 21.40. The settlement 21.56, again that down 17. And now back to Celeste for a look at how things wrapped up on the Mercantile Exchange.
Okay, Jay, it was a lower day today for cattle, while lean hogs finished mostly higher, and February bellies finished up today. November feeder cattle, the high price today, 108.32.5, the low 108 even, the settlement 108.27.5, that down 10. January 102.10, the high $100.70, the low $100.70, the settlement, that down the limit, down $3. March feeder cattle 96.50, the high 95.70, the low and the settlement, that down the limit, down 3. December live cattle 86 even, the high 84.32.5, the low, the settlement 84.62.5, that down 270. February 87.50, the high 85.90, the low, finishing at 85.97.5, down 292.5. December lean hogs 75.67.5, the high 73.45, the low 74.40, the settlement, that down 42.5. February 73.80, the high 72.45, the low, the settlement 73.17.5, that up 30. April lean hogs 70.50, the high 69.40, the low, the settlement 70.10, up 2.5 cents. May lean hog 69.45, the high 68.90, the low 69.30, the settlement, that up 55. And February bellies $100.80, the high, the low 99 even, the settlement 99.72.5, that up 7.5. And let's take a look now at the Dow. It is currently up 23 points at 10,573. The Nasdaq up 1 at 2101. The S&P 500 up 1 at 1183.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Richard Fish from Bloomington, Indiana writes, "Dear Dr. Science, when I was a child, I always thought being a grown-up would involve making decisions and using the kinds of knowledge possessed by adults. Now I am a man, and I'm employed in the mailroom of a large corporation. My job involves repetitive tasks that any fifth grader could manage, though I have a college degree. What happened?"
You've been had by the system. How else would we train a subservient workforce, teach them to dress neatly, to keep their hands folded on their desk, to keep their papers neat, to hand them in on time? They had to put a carrot at the end of that stick, and the carrot seemed sophisticated, worldly, flavored with opportunity. Most fifth graders would have dropped out of school if only they knew what adulthood had in store for them. Talk about childcare problems.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI Public Radio International. To receive a complimentary newsletter catalog or to order the Dr. Science Get Smart Kit with new CD, screensaver for PCs, and a master's degree mouse pad, call 800-989-DUCK.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Prairie Boat Works, Champaign; Lincoln Diagnostics Incorporated, Decatur; and Body Works.